The Brian D. O'Leary Show, your home for serious content amidst an unserious culture. All right, Brian D. O'Leary Show. Brian O'Leary here with you today with Henry Bingaman. Henry is a direct response copywriting consultant. Have I got that right, Henry?
I am many things.
Many
that
things.
Is one of them, yes.
All right, that's one. And that's how I think I got to know who Henry was. And Henry, like myself, is a member of the Tom Woods School of Life, which if you've been following this show for any length of time, I've had a fair amount of those folks on there, and I'm just interested in their stories. Henry is no different, so I want to know more about Henry's stories. So Henry, come on up and let's talk. And here we are. So Henry's got a podcast called Practical Liberty. Why don't you tell us a little about Practical Liberty and maybe some changes upcoming that we don't know?
Sure. I mean, Practical Liberty started kind of as the vision of it. Well, originally the name of the podcast was Getting Out of the Machine, mm-hmm. which turned out to be the right idea, just a little bit too clunky of phrasing. Mm-hmm. But this all started for me back in 2020, I guess, was the idea. So I'd been for 15 years a very well-known direct response copywriter and marketing consultant for some of the big publishers. If you know the health and financial world, I worked with a bunch of the Agora divisions. Agora is a billion-dollar-plus company. Mm-hmm. Natural Health Sherpa, Newsmax back in the day. So I worked with a lot of these companies. And then 2020 hit, and obviously some things in the world looked a little different to me than they had previously.
Yeah,
I'd been kind of in college. The first presidential candidate I ever voted for was Michael Badnarik. So like you go back to my old libertarian roots, that's 2006, I guess, whatever that election. No, 2004 election.
2008, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I became a very jaded libertarian very early on.
Okay.
And then I got really pumped up about the Ron Paul stuff, 2008. And then I was just burnt from all, like the way that they treated him really turned me off to politics for the next decade plus. So I hadn't been paying attention to anything political.
So you didn't even go back. You didn't even dive back in 2012. You just knew that it was going to be inevitable that he...
I was an armchair supporter in 2012. Got like I'm like, yeah, we'll give it another shot, but like we know the script. Like it's not going to be any different.
Right.
And then, you know, 2016 was one of those like, what am I supposed to do with this thing? Like, these people are all terrible. I think I actually ended up like, I was donating money to like Tulsi Gabbard and Bernie Sanders just to try to derail any, but like throw the whole machine off. Like, what can we do to make this thing fixable? Because I had just gone, well, libertarians are hopeless. What can we do? And then 2020, it was like, oh no, we were right all along. Like the libertarian philosophy was right. And like, I've just been giving up too much. I've been like too, I don't know, pacifist, I guess, too much, just too hopeless, too black-pilled. And I'm like, okay, it's either fight or die right now. So I decided I was going to step back from copywriting, launch the podcast, really spread the liberty message. I also really believed in freelancing and like everything, the way the world is set up is just anti-freedom, but there are options. So one of my big libertarian heroes is Larry Brown, okay. Or Harry Brown.
Harry
sorry.
Brown, yeah.
Yeah, how Larry I found freedom.
Larry
in
Brown was
world.
A beautiful basketball coach.
Yes. No, but the Harry Brown, he has one of the best books on selling, The Secret of Selling Anything. So mm-hmm. if you want to know how to sell or write, honestly, that's one of the books you should get. But his book, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, is really like proving, and he wrote that in the 70s, I think, or mm-hmm. 80s. And it was like, oh, there's all these ways around the systems that they have set up to kind of control you. You can get around the education system. You can get around the kind of corporate work system. At one point in there, he describes like the taxes that were coming in on his business. And how they just made it unaffordable. So he fired all his employees, hired them all back as contractors, and everybody made more money and paid less taxes. And that type of stuff still exists in the world, especially of solopreneurship and freelancing. So I wanted to promote that. I wanted to promote the liberty ideas. And that's kind of why I decided to start the podcast. I had made a decent amount of money so I could kind of float for a couple of years and see what happens. And so, yeah. So since I think I launched that in 2021 officially, or no, 2022 officially. Was the first podcast episode. So it's been going for about two years now. And it's been fun. I've got to talk to a lot of really interesting people. I got to be on some podcasts, got to meet some, there's just fascinating people that you can meet by doing a podcast. It doesn't even have to be that big of a podcast.
It's right.
People will just say, yes, I'll talk to you.
Yeah.
So I, you know, highly recommend starting a podcast just for the people you get to meet.
I agree. And that's kind of how I started. You know, I'm like, I think I was telling you beforehand, I started in sports podcasting. And it's like, I always wanted to do a sports podcast or sports radio or whatever it might be. And so I finally did. And then it's like, well, there's one thing I want to figure out. And let's just call somebody up and see if they'll come on. And the worst answer you can get is no. Right? Like, okay, well, you weren't going to come on my show anyway. All right. Well, he just emailed you, said, Henry, can you come on to my show? Cause I was like, this guy's doing a little bit of what I wanted to do with interviewing all these people in the Tom Woods school that have these great ideas. So I just recommend you go back to, Practical Liberty, and then do it on fountain.fm. I would say, but, go back to Henry's. Go back to Henry's catalog, and one of the latest ones. He talked about the mastermind you're in with Tom Woods, and all these people. Because I'm on a weekly or close to daily level, dealing with a lot of happy to be around a lot of these people, in a much lower stakes environment than the mastermind. We have weekly we call accountability groups. That we meet, you know, usually like between 4 and 12 people in each group. And you're in a mastermind with that Tom puts on, what, 3 times a year, I want to say? And
So there's monthly calls, and we have a ongoing group text. Text, but it's one of the messaging apps that we all talk. And then it's 3 times a year, big in-person events. So last year was New York City was the first one, which was great. We got to see a Broadway show, the show that goes wrong, mm-hmm. which is hilarious. One of Tom's favorite shows. Some really nice dinners. We saw some really cool magic. Then with Chicago, we did like an escape room on top of the restaurant scene and, mm-hmm. and everything else. And we saw Drunk Shakespeare in Chicago, which it was fun. I've never seen Tom get embarrassed. Yeah. And apparently he took his wife, Jenna, to the Drunk Shakespeare one other time in Chicago. It's like, oh, this is really fun. And whatever version he saw was just way cleaner and less raunchy than the version he saw. So there was just over the top innuendo, and Tom's just sitting there like it was still funny, but yeah. I don't think he was expecting that level of raunchiness. So he got a little embarrassed, but it was a really good time. And then we just did one in Vegas a few weeks ago, which is obviously for shows and food. Vegas is a great place, although I hadn't been there for over a decade. It's the prices are absurdly expensive on everything in Las Vegas. I don't know how anybody travels there for more than a couple days at a time.
Yeah, and it used to be that one of the appeals was it was like luxury for cheap, and now it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had to. So this is a little inside baseball. I actually we were supposed to record those interviews I did over 2 days.
Okay.
So we had two. We have we get in on Thursdays. We have a nice dinner, hangout, and then it's intense days of meetings on Friday and Saturday, where you're really sitting there. It's doing a hot seat. You're really drilling into each other's business problems, figuring out different ways to grow. And then there's a lunch break in there. And my goal was to record half the podcast interviews on the first day and then half on the second day. But I forgot the batteries. So you can't record with no batteries.
Yeah.
So I had to go to the hotel lobby that night was the only place I could go buy batteries. And I bought 2 4-packs of AA batteries and I paid $27.
Wow.
Those are the rates for in the hotel for everything. Like I went to look at room service one night because I was hungry and like I've been doing this like kind of carnivore diet.
Right.
The only steak they had on the menu was $100 and it was like a strip steak. It wasn't even like that fancy.
Gray.
But yeah, so I went hungry that week. Yeah. But I mean, anyway, the mastermind is really, it's got some really interesting people in there, a lot of like different experience. So I've done masterminds in the past with, you know, digital marketers, people that have online businesses. And you get a lot of good stuff out of those, like interesting ideas. But the cool thing was with Tom's mastermind, you know, he's a guy that runs a huge accounting firm. He has a guy that is an executive at an international sneaker company or shoe mm-hmm. company. Mm-hmm. He has somebody that had a $1 billion real estate portfolio, somebody that owns just like hundreds of like play zone type indoor playhouses for kids. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just another guy owns a equipment rental, like a construction equipment rental business, just this fascinating depth and breadth of experience that you wouldn't get in your typical like online type mastermind. But Tom brings together just people from that are ideologically similar, more, you know, more libertarian leaning people. So the entrepreneurial libertarian leaning people have a lot to contribute to each other, more than just like the, you know, tech bro guys that I've been in other masterminds with that, you know, they don't have a coherent philosophy other than how do I make more money? Like, I like having the group of people where we're all interested, obviously, in making more money. But there's a philosophical underpinning that makes it, I don't know, a higher quality.
Person, and there's like involved. Some sort of like principles undergirding the whole thing too. It sounds like, where as opposed to just like, oh, let's see how much money we can scrape out of this. No, like, well, I want my values to align with this other guy. And like, I think there was an email from Tom that, or Twitter post or something that had a picture of you and another fella said like, they're going to make a multi-million-dollar deal right now. I'm taking a picture of them doing a multi-million-dollar deal. Is that true, false, exaggeration, or care so, not to comment? I
mean, we actually worked out that deal in Chicago originally.
Okay.
So we worked it out at a donut shop in Chicago. Wow. before like the day after the event, we were just waiting for a plane. So we met up. We have a deal going. I'm writing a promotion for him. I know it's going to bring him millions of dollars over the long run. I am not on the multi-million dollar side of that equation, but you know, it brings his business millions of dollars. I'll get a couple hundred thousand out of it if it goes well. So it's a great deal. It's not, there's a little theater involved in Tom's post of making it look like it happened right there and then on the spot, but it did happen entirely because of, you know, meeting John in person and, you know, understanding exactly where his business needed help, where he needed to grow. And that matched up perfectly with my skill set as a direct response copywriter. So we hatched out a plan. Everybody loves it. His whole team's excited. And I am too. John's a great dude. It's a great business. He's actually one of the few accounting firms that like, they're more like financial coaches. Okay. I'm selling this guy's business. Paragon Accounting. Go check it out if you're anywhere near Georgia. But they really are. They're financial coaches, so they do profit first. So they make sure business owners, one of the things small business owners in the $1 to $5 million range miss is like they forget to pay themselves, the owners. Mm. So the profit first, it's a really great system. It increases profitability of the business, increases growth, and also makes sure that the principals actually get paid, which is something small business people forget to do. So John's got a great company. He's already growing on his own, but I'm happy to jump in a partnership and help him grow.
Yeah, no, it sounds awesome. And then I think I will make sure to get the link, because anybody can apply to be in this mastermind, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we had one person actually didn't renew. Originally, everybody wanted to renew. Uh-huh. One guy had to drop out for next year because it was just family. He's got two young kids, and mm-hmm. he's already on a big travel schedule. So he's just like, I can't swing all the travel. But we just picked up two more people that I don't want to say too much yet, but they're very interesting. They have a really good business. They add a little bit of international spice to the mastermind.
Okay.
So, I think applications are still open. You want to come sit down, figure out how to make a lot of money, eat some great food, philosophically align with some cool people. Obviously I endorse the mastermind. I'm just re-upping for my second year of $20,000 mastermind, which you don't do without some good reason.
Yeah. And you, I think you said in your podcast that it is really to look at it as an investment more than an expense because it can
always,
pay.
I wouldn't do it if it wasn't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then, as far as that goes, Tom has also started a junior mastermind program online only. So you don't get to go to Vegas, or I think the new cities he mentioned are, I want to say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Boston, or Nashville and Boston, not New Orleans.
We're still figuring it out.
Oh, still
exactly.
Figuring it out. Okay.
I know we have, I think we're doing Orlando actually, because everybody in the mastermind's also part of the School of Life.
Oh.
So just to fit in, everybody's already going to Florida for the new School of Life. So we're going to fit it in around the next School of Life meeting in Orlando. So that kind of works out for everybody's travel schedule. Then definitely Boston. And New Orleans was one of the discussions. San Antonio was another one, because that's where Marlon Sanders lives, who was a hilarious business expert that Tom brought to one of the masterminds as kind of a guest expert.
All right. Well, yeah, like I said, if you got any, if you want to find out more, I can connect you to Tom or Henry or whatever. And I'll have the links that will get you as far as we can go in the show notes here. So, but it is an application process, but I don't know, how difficult of a process it is, but, if you're serious about it,
it's not that difficult a process. Tom, just, you'll get on a call with Tom Woods and probably Paul Counts, who's kind of his like sidekick co-founder of the mastermind. Paul has a lot of business experience, worked with ClickBank, worked with, just a number of big companies, but they're just going to talk to you for 20 minutes to make sure you're a fit. Like, it's not just about the, you know, who can afford it. It's to make sure that like you're actually bringing something that you can contribute. You're not there because, you know, your rich uncle died and you're trying to figure out what to do with your life, right? You have to have some type of business or some type of, because the one person that doesn't have his own business has been looking to acquire a business. So like you have to have a business or a mission that you want to get out of it. And you have to have some experience that you can also contribute to the group. But as long as you're like pretty cool and have some experience in life, I don't think if you already like and follow Tom and you have some business experience, the application is more, it's just a screening to make sure you're a good fit personality wise.
Yeah. You talked mission, and I think that's maybe an interesting pivot point. A fellow copywriter, Ben Settle, turned me on to the work of Jim Camp.
Sure.
And he really hammers home mission and purpose and vision. And those are like the three things that come up. The late Jim Camp, I should say, he's been gone now for about 10 years, but his material, if you can get your hands on it, I mention him almost every single call I do. These weekly calls with Tom Wood School. I'm like, God, why do you just talk about Jim Camp all the time? I was like, he has 33 rules that apply. I'm telling you, they apply. You know, you go to that movie Copland. It's like, they apply, Freddie, they apply. But anyway, the whole Jim Camp stuff, he talks about mission and purpose a lot. And that's how to align yourself. And if you don't have a mission and purpose of what you're doing, you're just kind of floating through, right? So I would ask you, Henry, the question, what is, you kind of alluded to it earlier, but what is the mission and purpose that drives you, if you have explored that at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it's different, I think, at different stages of your life, and you have to constantly reassess where you are and what your mission is.
Yeah.
So like in the beginning, I grew up in the inner city. We were somewhat, you know, fairly poor there for a while I was growing up. Like vacations were a big deal. If I could really bug my mom sometimes to give me a quarter to get a soda outside the Sam's Club, like that. We were pretty poor. So growing up in the city, I just wanted to get out. I just wanted to make money. Like it was literally just, I don't want other people telling me what to do. I need to make more. Like I needed to feel significant and make money. And I've worked with a therapist to like unpack a lot of this over the past few years. Because, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are not honest about what drives them. And it's actually okay, especially in the beginning parts of your career, to be driven by like success markers. It's like, I want status. Like, just be honest with yourself about what you're doing. I want to be seen as significant because some, certain love I didn't get from my parents or teachers growing up, you're like, okay, well, you're trying to replace that. Recognize what you're doing and it's not the worst. And then at a certain point in your career, when you've had some success, that stops being a motivating factor. Like money will only get you so far in your life, which is why it's important to understand when it's your motivation that is going to go away. And if that was your motivation, you're going to feel empty. So you have to have something else. Like for a lot of people, it's like my parents are very religious. spreading the gospel of Jesus is one of their motivating things. And if they have to make more money to be able to afford mission trips, that's a good thing for them. Like that is their motivating thing. For me, it really is about freedom. It's like, I think there's some psychopaths running the world right now, and they're really ruining a lot of people's lives. And there's all these like ways to just walk around them. Like the freelancing is a perfect example. Like so many people are controlled because they're afraid to speak out because they'll get fired from their job. And if they lose their job, they lose their income and their security and their retirement and all these things they're thinking about when they're thinking about saying, hey, Joe Biden obviously has dementia and we probably shouldn't elect that guy. Right? Like there's some people that are scared to speak out of that. I think that's one of the things that's kind of ruining the world right now. So when I have a course on freelancing, and I think freelancing is like nobody fires a freelancer that's doing good work because of their political opinions. It's just nobody would fire a free. Like I had some super liberal clients who would never have fired me because I made him so much money as the writer. When you're bringing in the bacon for somebody, you're not even, I don't have like their name associated with me. Like they were a client. I wasn't an employee of XYZ company run by a liberal person.
Right.
I'm just like a vendor that made them money. So I could spout off my stupid libertarian-esque opinions and they would just roll their eyes and be like, yeah, yeah. Now, can you finish up that promotion you're working on? We both have money to make. Yeah. Whereas I know people that got fired for like hints, like being accused of misogyny on Twitter can get you fired from like any public, you know, publicly traded company or government agency. Accusations are enough to get you fired.
Yeah.
So I think like the chilling effect on free speech, the chilling effect on society from that type of just pressure that people are under, it's horrible. It's horrible for the world. And it's amazing to actually be free of it. If you were ever under that type of pressure, when you have your own career, your own money, your own income sources, where you're just like, you feel free to just flick on the bird, the feeling is better than, you know, making $1 million. The feeling of just independence and control you get over your life is, it's hard to describe until you've had it. And so my mission has kind of become, first of all, increasing my own freedom, making my own more money for myself. Like, I'm not going to lie about my motivations. Yeah. I have a business. I want to make money. But I want to make money by improving other people's lives. And that is the core of the exchange of value that libertarians know and believe in. I want to exchange equal value for equal value. If I can give you that feeling that I first got in my like mid-20s when I first started making six figures in freelance income, dude, it's incredible. And then if I make more money from it and we both end up better off, like this is my mission, is to help people while helping myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I see a lot of folks on a weekly basis that just trying to scratch out a side hustle or use some of these principles that we're talking about to, you know, create a little more freedom in their life. On the other hand, you have people that are satisfied, you know, very satisfied with the job they're in, and they just want to do a better job at that job. And we call that intrapreneurship to some degree. And because not everybody's motivated or designed to be the go out and get them freelancer. And frankly, there's just not enough room out there for everybody in the world to be a freelancer. Some people need to be a part of a team in order for things to work. But are you saying there's a special type of person that this, I mean, I would guess that this that freelancing works best for, or can anybody do it? Is just like, there's going to be the percentage of people that aren't even going to try it, are going to outweigh that. So there's an open spot for everybody that wants to do it.
I would say there's kind of a myth that a freelancer is like the lone gun that never does anything with anyone else, that it's all solo work. A lot of freelancers plug into different teams. So they might have two or three retainer clients, but they're like dependent on that. So like for me, when I was writing, I was a copywriter, so I was writing these long promotions. I had to plug into a client's graphics team. I had to plug into their tech team. I had to plug into their customer service. I was working with a broad spectrum of people and integrating and having a long, like multi-year, like the longest client I had was 2011 to 2021. So like a decade with one client, and you really get embedded in their team. I would say that you're right, that there are people that will hate the freelance life, that some people just, it's because you are your own client as well when you're a freelancer. So you have to have some level of entrepreneurial ambition. Mm-hmm. Now, I think a lot of people have squashed their entrepreneurial ambition. Like they're denying that they have that because, you know, they were told to keep their head down, or they're told, who do you think you are? Or they're told they're not that special or not that smart. So a lot of people like kind of step on their own dreams. But there's some people who just like, I live for the weekend maybe, and I want to get my job done 9 to 5, never have to think about that again. If you never want to have to think about your work at all outside of the environment of actually working, then yeah, freelancing probably isn't the right thing for you. Or maybe you're just in the wrong career. Like that's another possibility where if you want to step out of that, you might be in the wrong spot. But there's plenty of room. I think the entire economy could technically be contractor, freelance, solopreneur, independent professional, whatever you want to call it. But a lot of systems would have to change. And I think most people, and by most, I mean like literally probably slightly more than 50% of people are going to be happier just with one client who you could call a boss, right? One client, sure. One employer. They don't have to worry about, you know, obviously it's a little, all right, this is one of the other myths about freelancing. People think freelancing, you have less job security. you actually have more job security if you have more clients. So if you think about this, if you have a job and you get fired from that job, that was like having one client and getting fired from it. You're starting from zero. If you're a freelancer, usually you have 3, 4, 5 clients at a time. So if you get fired, you're losing 20 to 25, maybe 33% of your income. You're not losing everything all at once. So it's just, it is actually some more income stability after you've built up that funnel of potential clients. But there are people who, like you said, it's freelancing is not for them. And you know, for those people, I still think it's incredibly important to understand the concept of value and what value are you bringing to your employer? Because you can bring so much value even as an employee. This is kind of the entrepreneur thing you talked about.
Sure.
If you bring so much value and you're constantly the source of new ideas, it's going to be really, you're going to be last on the chopping block if they have to start downsizing, because you're the person that, like, you're literally paying for yourself. And most employees in today's world are, it's hard to trace the dollar for dollar, if that makes sense. Like, there are, like, obviously even a janitor brings tremendous value to a company, right? You need somebody to take out the trash and clean up, but it's really hard to trace, like, how much extra money you make from having somebody sweep up at night, right? So the closer you are to the value that the client or employer you have can see, the harder it is to get rid of you and the more money you can demand to get paid. That the closer you can translate that value into dollars for the company, the better off you'll be economically and security-wise. I feel like I went on a couple tangents there, but hopefully that.
No, it's good. It's all good. I mean, this is kind of a free-flowing. I call it a chat show, Henry. I call it a chat show as opposed to a formal interview or whatever. I just want to hear the stories of people. But yeah, I think that what you said there about, you know, delivering more value if you are an employee or a freelancer for that matter. And something I ran across, you know, just by being part of these accountability groups is that, you know, you get all these people bring up all sorts of things. So I'm constantly reading all this stuff where people bring in other ideas or other authors, articles, stuff like this. And one thing I ran across, and I even, I probably don't have it in front of me. I'll grab it in a second, but I have this kind of sheet. It has all these like main things that keep coming up. I call it my offensive coordinator's play sheet of all these things.
Nice.
But one of them is overpromise and overdeliver, because they can't fire you at that point. You're going to overpromise. You're going to promise them more than they ever expected, but you're going to deliver on a level that they never expected. I think a lot of people want to underpromise and overdeliver, and they think that's good. But if you're underpromising, you might not get the job in the first place. It's like any schmo can do that job if you're underpromising, and then you deliver this spectacular. But is it really that spectacular? Because did you push yourself? I don't know. And that's kind of what I try and do with my group every week. I fail oftentimes, but that's what I try and do.
I actually think there is, just from a marketing perspective, I don't want to call it overpromising because it's not really overpromising. There you go. That's a sheet.
There's my sheet.
That's the offensive coordinator sheet.
Yeah, or defensive coordinator, however you want to call it.
But yeah, I like the idea of making a big promise. I feel like overpromising feels deceptive.
Yeah. Okay.
In a way.
Yeah.
And because it's not overpromising, it's there's a concept in any type of salesmanship, really, and it's entertainment. It's people need to be wowed. Like, you don't go into a movie and, you know, the first scene is like two people sitting at a kitchen table talking about nothing, right? That's not what happens. It's usually some dramatic kidnap scene or, you know, a breakup scene or a love scene. Something big and dramatic has to happen to get your attention in the first place. And that's the same thing with the promising. You have to make a big enough promise for people to care at all about what you're saying. Like, the reward has to be big enough for them to even pay attention.
Yeah.
And then, yes, I like the idea of over delivering. So if you can make a big promise, get their attention, really get them, like, I always like to say, like, when I write a headline, I like to get people to give the reaction like, no, really? Like, they're like, it's almost too good to be true, but they have to lean in and be like, can it be true? Like, they have to find out, but the promise is so big that they're like, that can't be, can it? Like, that reaction is exactly what I want to bring people into any story or promotion or anything I'm doing.
It kind of reminds me a bit in the structure. I think about movies in when you're talking about this stuff, and Saving Private Ryan comes in. Like, I was sitting there in the theater. I bet my jaw was on the ground when I was watching that opening scene. And I'm like, how can this be bad? Like, how, I'm not that it was great. It was like disturbing, but powerful. Like, how can this movie get better? It just kept getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like that, using those principles in whatever you're doing, in your case, copywriting, or in anybody's other's case, their business endeavors, just keep that in mind. And yeah, maybe over-promising is not the right term. However, having a serious message up front and delivering on it is, I think, what we're talking about, really.
It's funny because people are, I think people misjudge what other people care about in two specific circumstances.
Okay.
Like if I say like, oh, I'm going to show you how to make $10. Most people are going to be like, I don't care. Like that, most people are not as interested in that, right? But people really think when they're making that promise, they think people are going to be fascinated. Meanwhile, when people are talking about themselves, they think people are paying very close attention and really are leaning in. And mostly people don't care about you. Like you really have to be out there for people, like to play it up for people to care at all.
Right.
So people don't care about like most promises you make unless you make it big enough. And people aren't. Like, this is one of the reasons people are so scared to try things and fail, because they're worried everybody's looking at them and going to laugh. Very few people are looking, even fewer people are going to laugh if you fail. Like, it's worth it to try, because you need to be your biggest cheerleader in this stuff.
It's not even going to be a blip on the radar kind of thing, like whatever you're doing.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things I've seen people get, because I've done a lot of coaching with freelancers and copywriters and entrepreneurs, and the fear of being embarrassed is stopping people from taking a lot of action.
Mm.
I'll tell a client that, you know, they have a good social media presence, for example, but they don't have an email list. And I was like, you need to be like, one of the most valuable assets you can build as a business owner when you're selling products is an email list that you can constantly reach out to people with. And they're saying, well, what if I say something stupid? I don't really know what to write. People are going to be laughing at me. I'm like, no, nobody's going to care. If like the worst thing that's going to happen is they're not going to read your emails. They're not going to be sitting there thinking you're an idiot for writing this. Like, that's not how it works. But you will have people that you'll find are actually that, because of your value alignment or what you believe in, there will be a certain amount of people that do care if you start putting it out there.
Right.
But
as far as the email list go, I've got a couple comments there. You know, what you said is dead on. Like, they might just not read your email. How many, and we were talking about our inboxes earlier off air, and like, it's huge. And like, I've tried and read all the ones that I want to read. I sometimes just don't get to them. But on that point, you look at open rates, which, you know, you can debate the efficacy of open rates in email. But I would say that 50% open rate, one out of every two emails that, whenever every two people reads your email, is extraordinarily good. It's extraordinarily good as a metric. And like 30% is even pretty good.
30% is, I feel like, standard-ish for an engaged email list. I just got up to over 50% recently on my email list because I purged 25% of my list who hadn't opened anything in a year. Hmm. And these are people that were, you know, you can go back and look at the history of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I actually had one guy unsubscribe 3 times.
Okay.
And then keep re-opting in for something else I was giving away.
Well, here's an interesting, as far as that goes, I just did a check myself the other day on my list, and I'm looking at the metrics, and I come across my name. I have like 3 of my email addresses just to see if my thing's getting through. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But on one or two of those accounts, I have images turned off. So it doesn't track that even I open it. I read every single one of my own emails like 2-3 times. It doesn't track it always. So I'd be careful that to eliminate those people and let them opt out and just worry about that metric later on down the road.
Yeah. So just for background, what I did, I actually did 2 emails to the list of just cold subscribers and said, hey, I know, because a lot of them you could look through and they're Proton Mail, and you're like, okay, Proton Mail doesn't mark anything as open.
Right.
So I said, look, if you, just so you know, I made it a joke. It's like, hey, are you cold? I think the subject line was, do you want a blanket?
Uh-huh.
And then it was, you know, my email service has you labeled as a cold subscriber. If you want to remain on, just click here. If not, you know, you don't have to do anything, and I'll gently take your name and I'll say a prayer and I'll put it in my dead to me subscriber has been. And I've kind of made a giving joke
it, give it a Viking funeral.
But I got like 50 or 60 people out of the, you know, few hundred that hadn't opened anything in a while to like click and say, no, I'm still reading these. I just, you know, for whatever reason, it doesn't mark as open. The opposite is true too. People that check mail on their phone frequently, a couple of the mail apps on your phone automatically, when they download a message, mark it as read to your email like service. So it, the number is just, it's really, it's all over the place. They're hard to judge. This is why I think, was it on air or before, we were talking about Ben Settle. It's like, the metric that matters is sales.
Right.
Like, how many people are buying from your emails? That's what you got to pay attention to.
Right. And I think that's good. So how can people sign up for your list, Henry? That's a more important thing.
Sure. Well, it's I guess it depends on which premium you want. Because I give away a couple different reports. So for freelancers, I have a report that's 5 free tools that make even new freelancers look like seasoned pros. Mm-hmm. And you can get that at henrybing.co/freetools. And then I have my kind of more liberty-focused version is the Levels of Liberty Tactical Checklist. So I have 4 different levels of liberty, from like non-PC NPC to like the sovereign, where you're fully in charge of your life. And I have a tactical checklist of how to kind of climb up each of those levels of liberty. And you can get that at henrybing.co/liberty.
Okay.
And that'll get you on my list.
Okay, that'll get you on the list regardless what download you...
Yeah, you get both of them if you want. You could download, like opt in, send me an email. I think there's every... I have an autoresponder that kind of says, did you get the premium? Just to make sure people are getting things. So if you respond, yes, I got it, or send me everything, I have a folder of all the premiums I've given away. If you opt in, respond to any email, just say, send me everything. I'll give you every report.
So that there's a little intersection here, and I didn't even plan on it, Henry, but so you're in Pennsylvania.
I am.
Are you a Phillies fan? Or a Pirates?
No,
or
I don't care about baseball.
You don't care about baseball. Well,
but I did. So I went to school in Pittsburgh. So I'm a Penguins fan and a Steelers fan.
Okay, fair enough. So, and then there's a fellow probably from your neck of the woods or close to Daniel Boone, former,
I used to, my Boy Scout troop used to go camping on the Daniel Boone homestead.
Okay. So my latest ebook. I re-edited it and put it out, and you can go to runitthunder.com, folks, for that. But it tracks the Boone family from its humble pioneer origins right around Henry's neck of the woods to my neck of the woods, where I grew up in Portland, Oregon. I grew up in Portland, Oregon. So it kind of tracks these different branches of the, and it's kind of a spoiler alert because you're not supposed to know until the end what it is, but I'm just saying, like, if you're listening here, you've probably been with me for a while, or you're with Henry, and then it'd be interesting to see how these the story of Americana works out. But it's only, I don't know, it's like less than 30 pages, I think, for that. But anyway, it's worth checking out. And that's how you get on my list, folks. Run at Thunder, or you can go to BrianDiolari.com. But anyway, we got a few more minutes, Henry. You also go to henrybing.co/freetools or henrybing.co/liberty to get any one of those downloads. Get on your list. But I have had some people say, I want to be in one of Henry's classes. I know. Yeah. I have one member that has been. In one of your classes, really enjoyed it. But
oh, nice!
I want you to tell people how they learn from you and what those offerings are.
So I have I'm not sure when this is coming out.
Okay,
I do have a new. I teach a course called Breaking Free, which is about how to build a high income freelance career, all the way from like deciding on what type of career you should do, like what type of services you offer. Cause I think a lot of people, one of the things that holds them up is like, they say, well, I like the idea of freelancing and having clients, but like, what would I do? What could I do that's actually worth getting paid? You know, at one point I got my career up to over $1 million in income. So like, but most people are interested in breaking the 6-figure mark at $100,000. They feel like, okay, I have a secure career here.
Mm-hmm.
And so the beginning of it is I have an exercise for figuring out what your skill stack is. And then that's basically the thing that makes you a category of one. There's no competition when you have a unique skill stack. You're offering something that a client can't just go like, oh, well, I like what he's offering. I'll go find the cheaper option, because the way you define it, nobody else can do it.
Okay.
So it's like, it's one of the superpowers of being a freelancer is defining your own skills. And then I, you know, how to pitch that, how to get clients, how to manage clients, which is, if you want to build a high income career in freelancing, client management, it's keeping the clients with you and keeping them. Basically, I never asked for a raise from any of my clients, and they all gave me a raise every year or two out of just straight fear of losing me.
Wow.
So that was all from managing the clients. So I had at one point a retainer of from one of my clients, $20,000 a month, just because, and I started at $6,000 for that client. They just kept adding a couple $1,000s a month so I wouldn't leave.
Okay.
And that was all just from managing the client, right? And then how to like supercharge your career. So it's four modules. That's Breaking Free. I recently just did a cheaper version of that where it just has the skill stack exercise. So if people want to just get in, kind of see what they're going to do with their career, what it would look like, I sell that for $29. The main course, I've sold it for as much as $9.99. I usually have some discounts. If you're in School of Life, you can just message me on the forum, I think, in School of Life. I'll give you a super big discount code that you won't have to pay anywhere near the full price.
Okay.
So hit me up there if you're in a School of Life. I like to, you know, keep our people happy and profitable.
Right on.
But yeah, so this front end version, this cheaper version is, it's because so many people, they go through the skill stack thing. They go through the Breaking Free course. And I have people that I've coached, like they bought a coaching call with me 6 months after they bought it. And they're still just on that first module, learning their skill stack and viral pitch, and it's benefited them like enormously. But they're still going through the first module or two entirely after 6 months in the course. So I mean, people have lifetime access; so you can take as long as you want to go through it. It's 8 hours of material or something, so you don't want to rush through it. But it's it's a great course. You can go to freeme123.com. That takes you to the main sales letter where you can buy the thing if you want to pay full price. Or if you're not in School of Life and you have to pay full price.
Yeah. Well, I would say if you want to get involved in the School Life, you can, I put a link on my website, just briandeoleary.com/TSOL, Tom School of Life. Go there, sign up. And then you can also sign up at tomwoods.com for Tom's weekly or daily letter. And Tom,
multi-email
of the day. But Tom provides some really nice discounts for the and not only discounts but value for these different programs he offers, and a lot of the offerings he has now will include 1 or 2 months free access to Tom Wood School of Life, which is $197 or $198, I don't know, something like that value. And you're in there for 2 months, and most people stick around because it's a pretty good value. And Henry's been there from the beginning. I've been there from the beginning, and I know we, just like college, I don't access nearly as much stuff as I probably should, but there's a lot of value.
It's funny. I talked to Tom about who stays and who doesn't stay in his School of Life, just because, you know, we're sitting in these meetings in the masterminds.
Yeah.
And he told me that basically, once people get into an accountability group, for whatever, it could be one of the weight loss, one of the business, there's a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, once you get in there, there's just so much value that you can't leave, like almost for any price. Like nobody wants to leave once they really get in there and start exploring the value of School of Life. And I've seen that. It's true.
Yeah.
Once you get in and you're actually involved, you're not just flirting, looking at, because it's great. He has those, the biweekly or whatever lectures that he does where he brings in a guest expert.
Yeah, webinars.
Those are cool. It's the group stuff. It's the community that everybody sticks around for. So if you get in there, embed yourself in one of the communities. That's where all the value in the community is.
And I think Tom would probably, he'd probably say the same thing. I'm not going to speak for him, but at the beginning, when I signed up, I'm like, oh, Woods is going to teach me life. Great. I'm going to watch the webinars. You've been a speaker at one of the webinars. I'm just going to get better at all these different facets of my life, and, you know, I'll pay him the, you know, whatever. You know, at the beginning, got a pretty steep discount of joining as long as you stuck around, but like, whatever. I mean, it's worth probably certainly $1,000 a year just to kind of, but now, like with the value add that he's created, and there's a lot more people and a lot more people active within this community that, just exactly what you said. Like they, of course I'm sticking around. I'm like, I've gotten way more out of it. And a lot of people in any of these groups, so say even your community or community that I set up or Tom's community, they want monetary proof immediately when they sign up, like, okay, is it going to return value? Well, what I say is that it will if you put forth the effort, because it's just another way, it's just another vehicle for you to just improve your life. And whether that's monetarily or otherwise, I can't say that for sure, nor would I.
No, and I don't think it needs to be that concrete.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a value to having a network of people that it can express itself in monetary terms if the right opportunity comes up, but it's valuable for so much more. Like, it's actually hard to put a dollar value on having a strong network of people that can support you. Yeah. Like, if anybody in the Tom Woods School of Life gets fired and says, hey, I got fired for this political reason, is there anywhere that's hiring? You're going to have like 95 jobs to apply to within the next 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, people they take care of each other, and you can't put a value on, you know, having a community that supports each other. That's just, and you don't have that in most of the world today, because, you know, the way the fiat system set up, the way the government system set up, the incentives are to tear each other down. So to be a community of people that actually builds each other up is, yeah, you can't put a dollar value on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And well, I think that's great, Henry. I really appreciate you spending the time here, and we could talk all day, I imagine. But like I said, just go to henrybing.co and, well, either one of these free tools/liberty, sign up for Henry's list. And of course, anything you want to know about me, well, not anything, but you can go to briandeoleary.com for my website. And like I said, if you want to learn more about Tom's School Life, briandeoleary.com/TSOL. And this wasn't really intended to sell the soap for Tom. I was trying to sell the soap for Henry's stuff, but, you know, Tom has helped us out both tremendously, I think, in our life, especially over the last couple years. So, like, why not? You know, it's a rising tide lift all boats.
Yep, so. Totally. I'm happy to, you know, as long as somebody's providing value, I'll shill anybody's stuff that I like.
That's right.
So Tom's been good to me, and it's a great community. I'm happy to shill it. But also, go to freeme123.com to learn more about the Breaking Free program, which could transform you into a high-income freelancer.
I like that.
Sorry, I put on my skeezy salesman voice there at the
That's
end.
That's all right.
But it really is. I have great feedback on the program. People love it. I can't even give the testimonials with a straight face that I've gotten, because the income numbers that people are reporting, I can't substantiate, but it's absurd what some people are doing with this program.
Right.
Like, really just getting out there. Now, people that have like high skills, but like high 6 and 7 figure incomes are coming out of this from freelancing, which is nuts. So it really, I mean, the program works, and you know, I'm here to support people with it. So
right on. All right, Henry, we'll chat down the road, and I appreciate your time.
Brian, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. For more of our podcasts, head on over to briandeoleary.com. And while you're over there, sign up for our email list. We'll send you daily emails. You can also find the link for our Substack page and various other resource pages we have. And that's at briandeoleary.com. Thinking about starting that new podcast of yours? Having trouble figuring out how to do it, perhaps? Never fear. We were in that same spot a few years back. At O'Leary & Company, we don't have all of it licked. But we've gone through the struggles of setting up those podcasts and those side gigs so that you don't have to. And you can go to O'LearyandCompany.com for more details. That's O'LearyandCompany.com.